The Brendan O'Connor Show on RTE Radio 1 with All Care Pharmacy. Advice and expertise on the relief you need from hay fever at All Care Community Pharmacies across Ireland.
Brendan O'Connor on RTE Radio 1.
Declan Kenny texts to say, I think this says it all, right? Delighted to hear the messages of President Higgins, a voice of civility and kindness. He met my daughter while out walking recently and gave her advice on training her puppy to stop him eating furniture, apply lemon juice. Where in the world would you get it? There's so much to be positive about. Thanks. That's from Declan Kenny. You see, that's the kind of president you want, isn't it? And lots of other people saying nice things. What a champion of humanity is our president. His sense of fairness, justice and altruism knows no bounds. We're so lucky to have him as our president. Any chance the law could change to get him to do a third term? Well, we should check that with him first. That's from Anne in Cork. There is a texter here, Gary, saying, Brendan, hang on a minute. What absence of social justice? The level of financial support provided in Ireland and emergency housing exceeded that of most countries worldwide. If anything, the panic illustrated the level of social justice in Ireland. OK, so let's move on. The president spoke there about that that awful cyber attack and everything. And we're going to talk about that a bit now. Misha Glennie, good morning.
Good morning.
And Misha, people will know you probably primarily recently as the writer and executive producer of the BBC's Mac Mafia TV series. You're also the author of Dark Market, How Hackers Became the New Mafia. And you consult governments on organised crime, cyber crime. So in terms of what we've been going through this past week, what I'm trying to say is you're the go-to guy on this. So very glad to talk to you. If we just go back and let's apply a bigger arc to this, because in a way, this story starts. It was when you were first making your name in journalism in the former Yugoslavia. But the collapse of the Soviet Union led to really this an explosion in organized crime, didn't it? And then cybercrime came from this, in a sense.
Yeah, it's a very interesting story. Essentially, what happens in after 1989 and the collapse of communism in Eastern Europe is you have a 10-year period throughout the region, and the wars in Yugoslavia were involved in this, of what's known as gangster capitalism. So you went from a planned economy to a market economy more or less overnight. And there was a huge grab for resources. This is when the great empires of the oligarchs that we know so much about, the Russian oligarchs, were made. And everyone, in order to get their market share, needed an organized crime group, a mafia group, to provide protection for them. So they became incredibly influential in the real world. And one of the consequences of the collapse of the Soviet Union was they had a lot of great scientists, including a lot of great computer engineers and physicists, who were all of a sudden out of a job. And very quickly, those scientists and their children began to understand what a fantastic tool the internet was. And when the internet started to be used for commercial purposes by things like Amazon in the mid to late 90s, very quickly, some of these youngsters who were brought up in this world of gangster capitalism where anything went, they started to learn pretty quickly how you could make a lot of money by stealing people's credit cards and people's identities. And this was when the whole thing got going. There was an extraordinary website that was founded in 2000 called Carta Planet. And I went and visited several of the members of Carta Planet. And this was a sort of Facebook for criminals, where you could buy viruses, download tutorials on how to commit cybercrime. You could buy fake documents and an ID. And they came up with the solution to the problem that everyone had as a cyber criminal in the beginning. Was they knew that everyone else that they were dealing with, buying and selling stolen credit cards, they were also criminals, so how could you trust them?
Yeah.
And they came up with something called the escrow system, whereby the Carta Planet administrators would keep the money until and the stolen credit card datas, and until both sides were happy with the product and the money, and then release them to the vendor and the purchaser, respectively. And this led to an explosion in cybercrime. Now, the reason why Carta Planet, for the Irish case, for the health service is so important is that perhaps unbelievably, at the end of May, beginning of June 2001, Carter Planet organized the first public and open conference for criminals called the First Worldwide Carters Conference. And they invited cyber criminals from all over the world, as far away as from New Zealand, Canada and Brazil. They all went to Odessa in Ukraine and held a 2 to 3 day conference about cybercrime and how you perform cybercrime. Now, I said to one of the organizers of this, who I interviewed at length, as it happens in a prison in Brooklyn in New York, I said to him, but what about the police and the Russians and everything? And he said, well, a couple of days before the inauguration, the opening of the conference, we got a visit from the KGB in Moscow, even though at that time Ukraine was already an independent country. Nonetheless, the KGB had a huge amount of influence. So the KGB came down and they said, look, we don't care how much money you steal from Americans or Europeans or Japanese or whatever, but don't you dare touch anything inside the former Soviet Union and particularly Russia. And as a second thing, if we require you for the purposes of national security, then you will jump too. And this was when you had the proliferation of organized crime groups, including ones like Wizard Spider, which attacked the Irish Health Service, organized crime groups who were able to operate without fear of punishment from the Russian authorities. And then we saw in 2007 and 2008, when there was a diplomatic dispute with Estonia in 2007 and an actual war with Georgia in 2008, that those cyber criminal group servers were used as part of the cyber attack that accompanied those conventional disputes.
That's when the unholy alliance was made.
Yeah, it's an unholy alliance between intelligence services, national security policy, and cyber criminal activity.
Now, tell me about these guys, because you've met some of them. The kind of guys who are operating now, I'm guessing they're not your traditional Russian mafia type, presumably kind of young, educated guys, are they?
That's absolutely right. So what has always been interesting about cybercrime is that in traditional organized crime, the mafia gangs, who we're familiar with from all sorts of places around the world, including Russia, is that if you want to have influence as a mafia group, you have to be able to threaten or deploy violence. And without that, you're simply not in the game because you can't protect the market that you're operating in. Cybercrime revolutionizes crime because you don't need that capacity for violence. So it attracts a very different sort of sociological type. They can be great con artists, because 86% of attacks around the world are not really very technical. They're persuading people to do stupid things on their computers. So by mistake, you will download an attachment which has already got a virus on it or something like that, called social engineers. You need to be good at moving money. You need to come up with smart ideas. And of course, you need people who are technically very, very proficient. So these are different types from those involved in traditional organized crime. But over the past 10 years, what police around the world have noticed is you've had a fusion of cyber criminal techniques, with traditional mafias adopting cyber in order to enhance their capability. And on the other hand, you've had cyber criminal groups adopting the structure of mafia organizations. So they're now very hierarchical. Everyone knows what job they have to do, whether they're deploying the malware, whether they're harvesting the money, whatever it is they do, they all have an assigned task. And they work office hours. They're very efficient about this.
Yeah, because we've obviously learned a lot about this in the last week ourselves here. And one of the things we've seen is that they try to present very much as business people. You are a client and we are offering you a service.
That's absolutely right. So it's a classic protection racket. It's what happens to the restaurants in Sicily, or used to happen in the restaurants of Little Italy in New York, when a bloke would come round and say, give us $250 for the week to avoid trouble. And if you didn't pay up for the $250, you'd get a brick through your window or worse. And that is exactly what is happening with this.
But is there a sense with this one, Misha? Because firstly, we're seeing that they've handed over the encryption key, and yeah. We don't know how normal that is to do. But is there a sense that they're backing off this attack a bit because it's not just the simple, you know, get the business to pay up and move on, that this has drawn unwanted attention on them?
Yeah, because it's the health service. So a lot of these criminal groups at the beginning of the pandemic, based in Russia, the former Soviet Union, and indeed elsewhere, said, we're not going to attack any health facilities during the pandemic. So this, again, is them trying to present themselves as, you know, decent human beings. That's so kind of them, that not to put a brick through our window. What you found, interestingly, was that one or two hospitals were attacked, but much fewer than usual. What we did see happen was a lot of activity around pharmaceutical companies, medical research institutes, which were dealing with the vaccine in the pandemic. Now, that was probably not criminal groups. It might have been criminal groups perpetrating it, but it was probably states trying to find out what the secrets of the vaccine were. Since last December, however, we've seen a series of attacks, and the Irish Health Service is the most recent, where criminal groups have gone for major, major organizations. There was a company which is incredibly important in many places, infrastructure, called SolarWinds. That was attacked in December. Last week, a week before the Irish situation, we had Colonial Pipeline on the east coast of the United States. Now, this is an attack that led to a shutdown of 45% of the oil distribution in the eastern seaboard of the US.
Now, and Misha, did we not see Darkside kind of back off that as well? That they put out this thing saying, we don't want to have social consequences to our actions, we just want to make money, and almost presenting themselves as kind of a Robin Hood outfit, and that they regretted this, and that they said they'd be more careful who they loaned their technology to in future.
That's exactly right, because what DarkSide's model was is it hires out its malware to other groups who then do the attacking, and they say they're backing off. Now, the way that I am reading that, this is speculation, but based on many years of understanding how these things operate, is that an intelligence service, a government, said to DarkSide, for Christ's sake, don't attack infrastructure in the United States on the eastern seaboard with its oil pipeline, because the United States has already arrogated to itself the right that it will strike back at anyone with a cyber attack at anyone, and if it wants with conventional weaponry, at anyone who goes for its critical national infrastructure. And so if the United States had information as to which territory that was coming from, they would, and they could, and they have launched very damaging cyber attacks on that. The United Kingdom does the same.
Think then that in our case here, could the pressure have been official on Wizard Spider from a government agency to say, guys, you need to fix this and sort it out and move away from it?
Well, it certainly could. I don't know what the relationship between the Irish intelligence service and the Russian intelligence service is. I know that recently the UK and the Russian intelligence services have re-established their cooperations. We think as intelligence services as being utterly hostile all the time, but actually they have written contractual relationships about how to behave and how not to behave.
Okay, well, we've been assured, I should just say, that there were no diplomatic channels used in this one.
Right. But so anyway. I'm saying that it's, you know, it's not beyond the bounds of a possibility, but my own suspicion is that Wizard Spider saw that they had done a lot of damage to the Irish Health Service. And that is bad news for Russia. It's just, Russia doesn't get anything out of that. We know that Wizard Spider is based around St. Petersburg. And so my suspicion is that, as with Darkside and Colonial Pipeline, is someone from the Russian government or the KGB went to Wizard Spider and said, for Christ's sake, back off. We can do without this right now.
So in a way, our kind of widespread panic that, oh my God, this is the world we're living in now and the electricity grid could be hit next and they could shut down the country and all that, possibly being a bit alarmist, this might actually be some kind of a tipping point where these guys decide they're going to back off doing things like this.
That's a very rosy view, and I commend all optimism, but okay. I'm afraid it's not what's going to happen.
Would you pay the ransom?
Well, if you want to stop ransomware, there has to be a policy that is adhered to by all countries and all corporations not to pay the ransom. Increasingly, what we've seen over the past 10 years is governments have made it compulsory to report if a breach has occurred, and it is perfectly possible that they will make it compulsory that ransom not be paid. And that certainly is likely to reduce the amount of ransomware attacks that we're going to see. But there are all sorts of other attacks that can make it extremely inconvenient. It's just ransomware is proving to be at the moment by far the most lucrative and efficient. I mean, we're talking about billions and billions of dollars that has gone to the ransomware attackers using, as we know, cryptocurrency as the way to pay it. This is a hell of a lot of money. It's a big, big industry.
Now, there's also seems to be a kind of a more cottage industry on this. And Misha, if you just stay with me for a minute, and I'd be interested to see what you think of this, okay?
Yeah.
Niamh Martin, good morning.
Hello, how are you?
I'm good, Niamh, thanks. So, Niamh, your company is Nima Brushes. You make and sell makeup brushes. And obviously, Instagram, very important to your business. You did 30,000 followers you built up over 8 years. And then on the May Bank holiday weekend, you got an email, apparently from Instagram.
Yeah. So, received an email through what I thought was Instagram. It was very authentic looking, very legit. And it was stating that I had gotten a verification, which is the little blue tick that you get on Instagram. And I thought this was fantastic. I thought this was like a little medal of honor, and I was going to have this, you know, extra level on my Instagram account. So I clicked through, I logged in what I thought I was clicking through, and I thought nothing more of it. Then over the next half hour, a couple of apps on my phone started to slow down. They wouldn't work, and they're things I use for work. And so I did the usual on-off trick. I thought if I turn the phone off, leave it off, you know, for a couple of minutes, it'll reboot and everything will work again.
Yeah, and that was your mistake, wasn't it?
That was the mistake, yeah. And even, you know, even after the whole hacking situation, I didn't think much about the app, but I heard a lady in the UK who had the exact same thing happening. So I don't know how they managed to get into the software of your phone, but... So that's, I suppose, what a lot of people do. You know, if you can't figure something out, you turn it off and turn it on again. So I turned it off, left it off for half an hour, and it was when I got back into the phone that everything had been changed. Had I not turned off the phone, I possibly may have been able to stop it, because when you change a username, a password, any information on an Instagram account, you get an alert. You know, you get an email through saying, was this you? And if I had seen that first one, possibly I would have been able to stop it, but the fact the phone was off.
Okay, and you had an email from the hackers as well. What did they want? What were they threatening
to
do?
Yeah, so when I opened the phone, I had several emails, which was very unusual for a bank holiday Monday evening. This was at around 9:30 at night. And there was all the emails of the notifications of all the changes on the Instagram account. And then the next one said, we have control of your account. To get it back, you need to contact us within 2 hours or we will erase all your content. Take your username and it will be gone. So I was kind of reading this thinking, "This okay, is this legit?" So then I got another one through and it said, we have not heard back from you. You now have 1 hour, and then that whittled down to 40 minutes. So I was on a countdown. So that's when I realized that there was no joke here. So at that point, I went down to my husband, got him to check to see if the Nima Brush account was even still on Instagram, and it was gone. It was completely, you typed it in, there was nothing. So that's when I started to panic. So I replied to them and I said, what do you want? And they responded and said that they wanted a payment of $900.
Okay, which you could see how that would be a tempting thing to pay just to make it all go away, presumably.
Oh, completely, completely, yeah. So, I mean, I did, like, you know, I was completely considering this. And at the same time, you know, the emotions were turning in my brain, thinking, okay, I'll do this and I'll be over. My husband had done a bit of research and he'd already found cases of this where people had, same thing happened, they've paid it and they didn't get their account back.
Okay.
So even if you pay it over, you're still not...
So ultimately, you rebuilt your account separately, and on you went, and no ill effects of it since in terms of you or your previous followers.
I suppose. I mean, one thing that's come out of it is awareness. Now, a lot of people have contacted me since saying that they got that same email. Since that, there's been another, you know, numerous amounts of like insidious kind of text coming through. I got something through on my WhatsApp.
Okay.
One thing I'm more familiar now with security levels. I have a McAfee security app downloaded on my phone. I have the two-step authentication put on every app that I have, from your PayPal to your WhatsApp to everything. So I am certainly much more aware, yeah. And I've spent...
It'll probably take it to happen to all of us for us to learn our lesson the way you have, Niamh. Misha, so there's clearly a whole mom and pop style operation of this stuff, kind of more unregulated than your wizard spiders just shooting this stuff out, yeah?
This is called drive-by phishing. So I just put it out there and whoever picks it up is then in the corner in the net. And I feel very... very sorry for Niamh indeed. And what her case demonstrates is how sophisticated they have become with the drive-by phishing techniques, like the blue tick authentication. It's great to hear that Niamh now does two-factor or multi-factor authentication on all apps. That's really important.
Okay, okay.
As, yeah. Of course, it's password culture and so on.
Okay. Misha Glennie, thank you very much. And Niamh Martin, thank you and well done.